Hi, I'm Rebecca Hart Franklin from ISO1 Movies, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 143. And my guest for this episode is a man that's been on this podcast many times. In fact, he's back for his sixth time here on the PVD Cast. And of course, I'm talking about film critic Paul Markoff. If you remember, back in August, Paul joined me to talk about movies that had come out in the first half of 2017. So we talked about those movies that came out from January up till August. And on this edition, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the movies that came out from August through the end of the year. We are recording this on the 23rd of January when the Oscar nominations came out. So we throw out our Oscar picks as well for the big categories, not all of them, not all the categories, but the big ones that everybody's concerned about: director, actor, actress, film, etc. So it's always a great time talking to Paul and getting his insight on what he liked and what he didn't like that has come out in the theaters. I would like to just throw out one other thing real quick before I get into the sponsorship of this episode of the PVD Cast, and that is I'm very super excited that news came out. I believe it came out Monday evening, but I just found out about it, and I am so super happy that one of my favorite films of all time is going to have, I guess you could say, another installment to it. Black Dynamite, ladies and gentlemen, is back, and I am so excited. I love Black Dynamite. It's an awesome film. I am a fan of blaxploitation films, and it is a very good parody of that genre. I love it. I watch it almost once a year and still laugh at it. It's fantastic. If you don't know what I'm talking about, number one, Google it, but number two, get your hands on a copy. I don't know how, but because I don't think it's streaming anywhere, but maybe it is. I don't know, but get your hands on a copy of Black Dynamite. You won't be disappointed. I thoroughly enjoy it, and I'm so excited that on Twitter, Michael Jai White said that a new episode, a new installment, a sequel, whatever you want to call it, is in the works, and I'm so excited. So, all right, with that, let me tell you about today's sponsor for this episode of the PVD Cast, and that sponsor, of course, is Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. As you know, Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of this fine podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you an opportunity to check out their service. Since we're talking about movies, maybe you want to get your hands on If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor by Bruce Campbell. That would certainly be an interesting read. Or listen, because that's what you do with Audible. You listen. You can throw it in while you're driving to work, and it makes your commute that much better, and you get to hear an awesome book. So all you got to do to get your hands on a free audiobook today is go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast to download your free audiobook. So go and do it, ladies and gentlemen. And with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, Paul Markoff joins me to talk about movies. All right, movie maniacs. I'm sitting down here with Paul Markoff, returning again to talk movies with me. How you doing, Paul?
Good, good. Thanks a lot for having me back.
You're quite welcome. You're quite welcome. I think the last time that we talked, it was mid-August 2017, and we had recapped all of the movies that had come out the first half of the year, so now we'll take a look at the second half of 2017.
Yeah, right? That's when all the prestige pictures come out.
All the prestige pictures, and we had a few more summer blockbusters.
Of which I think, real quickly, I would like to talk about Dunkirk, because I know the last time that we talked, I had not seen it. You kind of gave your thoughts about Dunkirk.
Yeah.
So I'd just like to chime in and start off with that. I did enjoy Dunkirk. I felt that the multiple timelines was a little bit confusing at the beginning.
Yeah, I can see that, because it's, I don't want to say it's purposely so, but I mean, you're dealing not only with three different timelines, but three different units of time.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So I think the first 20 minutes, half hour, was really confused as to who was who, what's going on, what are we doing. Once it got rolling, I enjoyed it. But yeah, the first section of that film is a little bit troublesome.
Well, and that's what the director, Christopher Nolan, likes to do. He likes to toy with time in, I don't want to say all of his movies, but that's the one that put him on the map was Memento, mm-hmm. which is certainly, you know, telling a story in reverse.
Yes.
And then, of course, he deals with time with Interstellar
mm-hmm.
and even lack of time to a certain extent in Insomnia, where Al Pacino doesn't get enough
sleep.
So.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so overall, I liked Dunkirk. So I think that was one of the ones that I wanted to cover real quick. So, all right, let's jump on in here. I have an oddball selection that I saw in November, but it did come out in September, and that was Kingsman: The Golden Circle.
You know, I didn't see the original, I didn't see the follow up, but I know this, the follow up, the sequel wasn't quite as well received as the original.
Well, here you go. This is why I call it my oddball. I've never seen the first one.
Okay.
Long story short, I was at my brother's house for Thanksgiving. He happened to have it. He was like, "Do you want to watch?" He had seen the first one, really liked it. I was like, "Well, sure." I mean, I've never seen the first one.
Although it's a prequel, actually, isn't it?
Well, it's not. No, it's kind of a sequel to the original. I didn't mind it. It's fun. It's very. I know you're not a Bond fan, but it's kind of that tongue in cheek, kind of over the top, poking fun a little bit at Bond.
I don't mind the tongue in cheek and the poking fun. I actually probably would enjoy that. My problem with the Bonds is that it's the same movie over and over and over again.
But I didn't mind it. I liked it. But yeah, like I said, it was oddball because I'm not familiar with the first installment, so I was a little bit. I guess I would say a little bit hesitant to really give it a real hard grade, but I gave it a B. I thought it was enjoyable.
Okay, it was good. Fun. Yeah, it looks. I mean, it looks like that's. Yeah. You know, I didn't associate it with the Bond mold, but I can see it now. Where
it's
essentially a smooth, slick Brit.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And killing people.
So, what's on your list here?
Well, we did our final episode of Now Playing. We did our best of the year.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, some of that spills over into what occurred this morning. We're
shooting
the podcast on Oscar nom Eve.
That's right. And I have that information.
It's not Oscar nom Eve, but it's the evening that the Oscar nominations came out.
Yeah, we could talk about those films in a little bit here. We've got quite a few.
Yeah, and some of those are certainly on my honorable mentions and my top 10 list. I, Tonya is one that was on my honorable mentions list, which I thought was very good.
I recently saw that this weekend.
Okay.
And I really, really liked it. I put it on my top five list. I really liked it. I felt that the acting was great.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's an ensemble piece. It's as good as anything out there this year.
Yeah, to me, this is what really struck me was the editing. Because, look, we're not stupid. We know Margot Robbie's not skating.
Right.
You know, but the way in which the editing is so smooth and the cinematography is done so well, you forget that. You forget she is not really doing the triple axles and the sow cows and all those other stuff that I don't even know what that means.
Right. Well, the triple axles, the move that that's put her on the map that no one else could do. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the editing, the movie is pieced together so well that not for 1 minute do you think that Margot Robbie isn't the one that's skating.
Right, exactly, exactly. So I was blown away by I, Tonya. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, so. I really like that. Lady Bird is also one of my honorable mentions. That's up for Best Picture, along with, you know, additional other awards. And then I just watched it last night because I knew we were shooting the podcast today. And I really think that I don't know that I expected her to be up for Best Actress, but I think it was probably next to maybe Robbie's performance in I, Tonya, Jessica Chastain in Molly's Game. This is, to me, she's been terrific in other movies, but to me, this is a star-making performance for her. This is, I think, something that maybe leads her to, you know, be a, I mean, she's been a lead actress, but again, mm-hmm. more in independent or mm-hmm. art house films. But I think this is maybe the one that kind of puts her on the map with the big studios.
She got nominated for lead actress, or
no? She didn't.
She did not. Okay, I was gonna say did. I thought she's okay.
Yeah,
I was looking at my phone when you mentioned that. I was like, wait a minute, I have right here lead actress. She's not mentioned in there.
No. I think okay. she kind of got stiffed. Again, I don't know if it's maybe the nature of the character or because it was more of a, I mean, I hesitate to say mainstream, but it was made by a major studio and mm-hmm. it went wide with its release. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a smaller niche prestige film to mm-hmm. a certain extent.
I had a friend that liked it, and he said, surprisingly, he didn't think that he was going to enjoy it, but he liked it. You know, when we were talking about movies a couple of days ago, he said that it was actually a good one to check out, so...
Yeah, you really get absorbed into this world of underground gambling and her story. I mean, it's an amazing story.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
You know, a former aspiring Olympic skier. She was essentially ranked, I think, fourth going into the U.S. Nationals when attempting to make the Olympic team. Mm-hmm. Had an injury, and then that sets in motion her delving into Los Angeles and the underground world of competitive gambling. And then she gets investigated by the FBI. And I mean, it's a remarkable story, but it really doesn't work if you're not fully immersed in mm-hmm. her situation. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of a unique individual on her own.
Well, I'm going to throw it to one that I think got nominated for quite a few of the technical awards, which, I mean, I don't, not that those are not important, but I don't think those get the attention, if you will, as our main one. But Blade Runner 2049.
I enjoyed it. And as a technical exercise, it's terrific.
Yes, yeah. I agree. I liken it to the first Blade Runner, which I think is okay. And I mean that. I think it's okay. I gave it a C. I feel like this one, likewise, I didn't think it was awful. I didn't think it was great. Technically, it's spectacular in the cinematography and the special effects and that. My biggest problem that I had with it, and again, spoiler alert, and in the show notes, you'll know where the spoilers are. You have an actor and a character that's literally only in the film for like 5 minutes. And that bothered me so much. Oh. We're talking about Jared Leto. I mean, what point was his character? Why was he even why bother even to have him in the movie?
Do you think it bothers you so much because it's Jared Leto? Like, it was just somebody. If it was just somebody else,
you know what?
It was just
probably somebody else. You are absolutely right.
And he's coming on the heels. I mean, it's a couple years ago, but still, he won Best Supporting Actor, and he's kind of lifted himself.
But you know what? You're
that
right.
When you hear Jared Leto's in a film, you expect a little more out of it.
Exactly. That's probably exactly what the problem is. If it was some other, you know, mid-grade character actor, I would have been like, oh, okay. All right, that dude's in there. Okay, no big deal. But you're right. It's because it's him, and I wanted something epic from him. So, I don't know. But it wasn't a bad film.
I enjoyed it. I liked it a little bit more than the original Blade Runner.
Really?
Yeah, I think the original... I mean, I like the original Blade Runner. I mm-hmm. gave it a B. We actually did it on Now Playing as our kind of video pick.
Okay, but, okay.
Looking... In our fifth spot, we used to do four in the theater, one on video, and that was our video pick. Because that was more or less a brilliantly staged and viewed, you know, visual spectacular, mm-hmm. the original.
Yes.
But it was kind of a standard police procedural.
It was. Yeah.
This one goes a little more out of the box.
Sure.
And it delves into kind of technology's impact on us emotionally, mm-hmm. psychologically, mm-hmm. and I guess I enjoyed it. I found it to be a little more deep than the first film.
Sure. But I think if you like the first one, I think no doubt you'll like the second one. I think that's an accurate statement to make.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a fan of the first one, you'll like the second one. So, all right. What else is on your list there?
For my honorable mentions, I have Wonder, which is a kid's movie.
Okay.
Based on, I'm sure you're familiar with, as as a teacher.
Yes.
New York Times bestseller about a child that has a physical deformity, mm-hmm. and about him trying to deal with that and begins attending public school.
Mm-hmm.
What to me initially kind of appears as kind of your old after school special, like I grew up in the 80s, is a lot more.
Okay.
I mean, I thought there's a lot of depth to it. You get to see what the other characters, how they view Augie, which is the mm-hmm. The lead character. And not only you see what Augie's going through, but you see what all these other characters are going through and how his situation affects them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty empathetic to everybody involved. And I think that's kind of a big theme of empathy for all the characters that is going through a lot of the films that got released in the second half of 2018. Mm-hmm. But I liked Wonder. I liked Wonder Woman.
Yes, I have Wonder Woman. I still stick to the notion that I think that was the best movie I saw this
all year.
Yeah,
okay.
All year. I really do. I was so impressed with it. As we talked in August, I really thought it was just a fantastic film all the way around. All the way around.
And there was some buzz a little early on that maybe this might stick around and might, because there's, of course, more pictures that are nominated for Best Picture these days than there were 10 years ago.
Yes.
That maybe Wonder Woman could sneak in there.
Yes.
It didn't, I suspect. I didn't go through the complete list of Oscar noms, but I suspect it's probably up for some either visual or some of the technical awards.
You know what? I think when I looked, I think there are some technical aspects to it, yes, that they're up for.
But so. I really thought Gal Gadot was terrific in it.
Yes, I do too. Yeah.
That was a star-making performance.
That was. Well, let's talk a little bit about Gal, because she was in Justice League. So
right.
What did you think of Justice League? Did you catch it?
I didn't think too much of it.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I thought it was slightly better than Batman versus Superman.
I also thought I thought it was okay. Much like Blade Runner 2049, I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was awful as Batman versus Superman, but I didn't think it was spectacular as Wonder Woman. I just felt my biggest problem is I did not like Ezra Miller as the Flash. I just didn't really. I felt that it was a very cliched way to present the Flash. He's a young superhero, so he's got to be socially awkward and weird, just like Spider-Man. And I'm like, that's been done before, and so let's not do that. Maybe, you know, I felt, if you were going to use the Flash and try to put him in an awkward phase, make him more X-Men. Like, you know, I have these powers, but I don't really know how to use them. Rather than being like this weird, nerdy, socially awkward individual. So that bothered me. I did enjoy the fact that there wasn't a lot of backstory. Like, here, yeah, we're going to go, and here we go, folks. You know, which I think, you know, in previous DC movies, that's what bogged them down, is we've got to give a backstory for everything. And so I think that was a plus. I don't mind Ben Affleck as grumpy old crotchety bent Bruce Wayne / Batman. I don't mind that.
It's just a little awkward when he tries to infuse humor into Batman.
Well,
it just doesn't seem very appropriate to me. That was the one, I don't want to say glaring weakness, because in general I didn't think I wasn't wrapped up in the plot or the circumstances.
No, the plot was very simple. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of felt like, let's you know, introduce a few more characters. You know, we got to bring Aquaman in. He's got to have his own picture coming out, you know, this year.
Which, let's be honest, that's the coolest Aquaman has ever been.
Yeah,
he was.
Like,
he's lame.
That was part of my problem, though. I mean, I remember the Aquaman from the, you know, the animated series. Aquaman was, more or less stuck in the water. Yeah, he's lame. He's clean. I mean, who's this guy? Who's this brute? That's not Aquaman. That wasn't my Aquaman.
I thought it was middle of the road. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it either. I don't know that I feel like it deserves all the hate that it gets online. I don't know. I just didn't think it was that bad.
No, well, part of the problem is you have the fanboys.
Sure,
they
right.
They know all right. the backstories for
Correct.
All of these characters.
Correct.
And if it doesn't live up to the
yes.
comic origin and, for lack of a better term, sainthood that these characters have to live up to, you know, it gets trashed.
Yeah, sure. All right, some other honorable mentions from you from the films that you've enjoyed.
I know I'm in the minority here, but I like Cars 3 a lot. I actually thought it was the best of the Cars series. That did not get nominated for Best Animated Feature.
No, it did not, no.
But I really liked it. I mean, I thought it was kind of a reflective look back, kind of a nostalgic look back, but also, you know, it understands there's a passing of the torch such, and that's, you know, kind of what, you know, the lead car has to come to terms with.
And Cars 2 was so lousy that anything could have been better, right?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
So
yes. But I still really like Cars 3. Only the Brave.
Now, you're going to have to remind me. Only the Brave. I got to be honest, I'm drawing a blank on that one.
It was about firefighters in California that
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. That did not get a very wide release, did it?
It didn't do very well.
Okay.
I think it went fairly wide, but I think it kind of flopped. I think it came, I want to say it came out maybe in September, which is dumping grounds. And I'm not sure that they really knew how to pitch it. I mean, it's a serious film,
mm-hmm.
and it's done very well.
Who stars in that, if I may ask?
Josh Brolin
is
the lead firefighter. Okay. Miles Teller is kind mm-hmm. of is the young up-and-comer that he's showing
the apprentice or whatnot. Yeah, okay.
And Jennifer Connelly plays his wife. And I thought it was extremely well done, very thoughtful, and not only, you know, viewing these firefighters as heroes that are going out and battling the blazes, but getting down to the fact that these guys are also flawed.
Sure.
And that not only are their actions going to impact their family, but them being firefighters. And it showed what Connelly goes through
mm-hmm.
and some of the wives have to go through. That it's not just, you know, I mean, it's heroic that they're, you know, serving that capacity. But it's also heroic in some terms what their families are going through and, you know, how they have to sacrifice mm-hmm. when they didn't necessarily sign up for it.
Mm. Okay. All right. I'm going to go with My Friend Dahmer was a film that I really enjoyed that came out, I think, in October, based on the graphic novel by John Backdurf, his experience going to high school with Jeffrey Dahmer in suburban Akron, Ohio. I thought it was pretty well done. It stuck very close to the book, the graphic novel. I enjoyed it. I think it's a very compelling story. And a story that honestly, that was the biggest thing that I took away from the graphic novel was, oh my gosh, there were so many telltale signs and nobody paid attention. Like, nobody paid attention to poor Jeffrey Dahmer. And to think if in that time frame of the 1970s, if somebody had just taken a few moments to try to help this kid, maybe things would have turned out differently. But the film, I thought, captured the essence of the book very, very well. And I enjoyed it. So.
Now, I don't know anything about the book or the film.
Sure, yeah.
Is it completely centered around his time during high school?
Yes, it is. Yes, okay. Correct. His formative years and talking quite a bit about the movie kind of compresses some of the timeline a little bit, obviously, because, you know, you're trying to kid it into that, you know, 2-hour time frame. So it just basically looks at the time in which Mr. Backdurf met Dahmer, gives a little backstory as to what was going on with home life and how he and Dahmer kind of became friends in this kind of very weird, I guess you could say typical high school way where, you know, as in high school, you probably had friends that you liked, but you also kind of gave them a hard time. And it's kind of that type of a relationship between those two. Really, really did like it. It was very eye-opening. Like I said, I'm a big fan of the graphic novel and I think the movie does it justice. Right. So I would definitely recommend that one. Did you see Murder on the Orient Express?
I did, and I was just kind of ho-hum about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I really liked it.
I know it's a popular Agatha Christie, I believe.
Yeah,
is
yes,
the one that
correct.
Penned the novel. I really found the conclusion, I didn't know anything about it, I really found the conclusion to be underwhelming.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think the trailer is tremendous, and I think the performances are really good.
Yes,
it's a great looking. I mean, the production value is terrific.
Yeah.
With the costumes and the set design,
mm-hmm.
Even the derailing of the trains.
Pretty
good.
Put them in that predicament. Yeah,
yeah.
I liked it. I thought it was very well done. I felt like. I don't know. I didn't find the conclusion, the resolution to be too underwhelming because it's an unexpected twist. So I kind of knew going in with Christie that maybe there might be a twist at the end. And, you know, I don't know. I am also, as I freely admit, I do love the topic of vengeance in a movie. And I think that this is that, okay.
Yes.
It's the vengeance of Johnny Depp's character, Cassetti. And so the revengeance that the characters got on him. So I kind of dug it. I liked it. I gave it an A-. I thought it was very well done.
Okay.
So what else is on your list?
And I'm not sure if we've talked about this before. Okja, did we talk about that on the last podcast?
No.
This is the Netflix, straight to Netflix release, which to be honest, I think would have benefited greatly from being released on the big screen.
Okay.
It's about a corporation that creates these creatures called super pigs. And they're supposed to, instead of having a ton of pigs,
okay.
you just have the one super pig that c- kind of, you know, creates a, you know, it's more environmentally conscious and whatever, but it basically breaks down to a young girl and her pig. But I mean, this is a big pig, right? So the corporation wants to take the pig back.
Okay.
And they're going to do what most people do with pigs.
Slaughter a pig.
Yeah, when it's time.
Okay.
Yeah,
time for bacon.
Yeah, and the girl doesn't want that. So.
Okay.
And then there's kind of this
Who stars in this?
I honestly can't remember what the girl's name is. Right. Tilda Swinton is the...
is one of the actresses?
She's... Okay. Well, yes, she's the face of the corporation.
Okay.
Her and her sister kind of...
Okay.
They've taken it over from daddy's control.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's really... It's pretty far out.
Okay.
I think the best way to describe it, it's a kid's movie that should not be viewed by kids.
All right.
Because it's pretty dark and some of this stuff's pretty gruesome. when you get to the slaughterhouse, you know, that can be a little rough.
Nothing good comes from the slaughterhouse.
No.
Well, if you're the pig.
Right.
If you're humans, you're like ham, pork chops.
Bacon.
Yeah. Okay.
Moving into my top 10.
All right, yeah, let's go into the top 10 here.
Since I'm knowing my honorables, Split. Did you ever see Split?
I never did, and I want to. I need to check that out because I've heard very good things about it. And I got to be honest, it was another one of those movies. And I think we talked about this in August. There were Baby Driver, Get Out, Split is another one where I'm like, I saw the trailers. I'm like, I don't know. That looks kind of lame. But then I hear so many good things about it. This year, I think this has happened to me more this year than in any other year previous.
Well, Split is one that certainly I could see someone rolling their eyes at in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have James McAvoy playing, I think it's 23,
yeah.
maybe 28 yeah. different personalities, split personality disorder.
Yeah.
So he plays all of these different personalities within the film. So either you buy into it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I think he works, and I on our Central Iowa Film Critics Association Awards, I put him as one of the top five performances of the year. I thought he was terrific.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward. I'll have to check that one out. All right. Yeah,
and I don't want to give anything away, but it's M. Night Shyamalan, so there's a nice little...
Oh, yeah. There's a twist at the end, I heard.
There's a nice little twist at the end. So,
all right.
If you're familiar with his works, I'm sure you'll enjoy it. I'm sure everybody will enjoy that. The Big Sick is my number nine pick.
Okay.
It's a romantic comedy. I don't think it got nominated for Best Picture. There was some talk about it being up. And to be honest, I think it probably didn't because it's a romantic comedy.
Mm.
But it's really good. It's based on a real life story of a stand-up comedian and his...
relationship with a woman that's outside of his ethnic background, if you will.
Right. Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah,
and then, of course, she gets sick.
And
that's the majority of the film is she's in the hospital. And
mm-hmm.
he's trying to come to terms with that, and
sure.
it broke things off earlier, and then her parents come in. It's pretty good. Ray Romano and Holly Hunter play the parents, and they're really good as the parents, too.
All right. I'm going to throw out... Here's one that was on my top five.
Yeah.
Thor Ragnarok. I really enjoyed this one.
What?
No.
What? No? I disagree. I didn't care
for it. Oh, really?
Okay. And again, I know I'm in the minority because I've seen the Rotten Tomatoes scores on this. This is upwards of in the 90 percentile.
I really dug it. Like, I didn't enjoy the first Thor movie. I thought it was just so boring. The second one was okay, even though it was very thin on plot. And I was like, well, okay, I'll go check out. I think Ragnarok plays more like a buddy cop movie than a superhero movie.
I can see that. There is a lot of intertwining of other stories, though, that I kind of felt lost to a certain extent.
Okay,
they're not on Earth.
Okay,
there's no portion of the film that takes place on Earth, if memory serves me straight. Maybe some flashbacks.
I think there's some flashbacks, but I think bits and pieces. But the majority of it is on another world. You're correct. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then they had Jeff Goldblum's character, wasn't
yes.
he from? Is it Valkyrie?
No,
he's just similar.
He's very similar to
okay.
that. Yeah, he's not. Yeah. So, I don't know. I liked it. I guess now that you bring that up, that there are some other tie-ins to it. I don't know. I just really dug it. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's got a good sense of humor.
It does.
It's to me, maybe at times, it's a little too cutesy as Thor's constantly playing the foil in the film. But the stuff with him and Hulk is good.
Yeah, yeah, I enjoyed it. I put it on my top five. I thought it was phenomenal. I also this one teetered on the number five slot before I, Tonya, The Disaster Artist.
I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it tremendously. I liked it a lot. And I felt like the fact that I met and talked to some folks at a Christmas party that had never seen The Room.
Okay.
But they thoroughly enjoyed The Disaster Artist. I'm like, see, that's good. Because, you know, if you can pull in those people that are completely ignorant as to what the heck this film is all about and still entertain them, I think you've done your job. So hats off to Franco and the boys over there for doing that film.
Yeah, I gave it a B on Now Playing at the time. I think I enjoyed it more because I saw The Room, and it was it was interesting because, I mean, they give you kind of a side-by-side scenes at the end of the picture, but I had apparently left enough of an impression when I saw it because it's so horrible that I remember, you know, watching the scenes. It was interesting to see. It kind of felt like a behind-the-scenes look at The Room without actually being a behind-the-scenes look.
Yeah. Now, the funny part, did you know there was an extra scene? In that, clear at the end of the credits, you had to sit through the entire credits. I did not know this until a friend of mine just told me about this. You had to sit all the way through. There is a scene with Wiseau and Franco talking about it's just gibberish. They're just talking about things, and it lasts for like 45 seconds, and that's it.
Okay. And I have it on screener, so I'll go back and watch
it. The rumor was, this is what my friend told me, the rumor was Wiseau would not allow them to have any rights to The Room unless he was in the movie. So they shot this. They tried to fit it in because Franco is actually dressed as Wiseau, and then there's Wiseau. Then they're talking just weird banter, and it didn't fit anywhere. So they're like, screw it. We'll just stick it on the end. So that's the rumor. I don't know. I did not know that. I left when the credits
were. That sounds like something Franco would
probably do. Yeah. So what else is on your top 10?
Baby Driver, which
I never got to see, but we talked about it in August. You said how good it was.
Yeah. That kind of plays, granted, I'm a big fan of La La Land from last year, but I mean, it has its own beat and moves.
It's
really good. Detroit, I'm not sure if we talked about
that. We did talk about that in August, that was a very good one.
Mudbound is number six.
What is Mudbound? Because I've heard some buzz about this. I got to be honest, I don't know the plot of the movie.
Right, it's set during, I think it's the beginning of, it's World War II, yeah. And it's a landowner down south. Mm-hmm. The landowners, they're a white family, and the people that work the land are African Americans. Mm-hmm. And it kind of juxtaposes the two families because they have a family. They both have multiple children. Both of their, I think it's their eldest sons, mm-hmm. both go off to fight at the war. They both come back at the same time. Obviously, there's the racial tension down south.
Sure.
The Klan is, you know, doing their thing down there. And that, of course, impacts both the families.
Who stars in this, if I may ask?
Michelle Williams. I should have pulled up the Internet Movie Database. It really is an ensemble piece. There's no real star. Garrett, if I'm mispronouncing it, I think it's Hegblin. He's the white family's son that comes back.
Okay.
Not a bunch of big name stars.
Okay.
But
because I've heard of it, good. I got to be honest. I heard it in passing. I think a couple weeks ago when they were talking about Oscars coming out and whatnot, and I'm like, I don't know what that film is. I never even heard of it. So this is kind of an eye opener for me.
Yeah, it's a period piece.
Okay.
It deals with racial tension, and of course, the where it works so well is it shows the similarities between the two families.
Yeah, sure.
Even though
they're
on different socioeconomic,
you
know, they're going through the same things. And in many ways, the impoverished African-American mm-hmm. family has it much easier because they're a strong family unit.
Mm-hmm.
And the head of the household, the father of the black family, is a minister. And you see these scenes at the church.
Mm-hmm.
You see that, you know, likely their faith leads them through a lot of the struggles that they're going through. And that they're a cohesive family unit as opposed to the white family.
A little dysfunctional.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's really good. So what else is on your list there?
Get Out
is also on mine.
I actually bumped that up.
Yeah.
It was number seven when we shot the show, but I saw it again. It's really good.
I was just going to mention that. At Halloween, I saw it again, and it really holds up. It really, really holds up.
Well, you can see the clues that they're setting in motion
Second
time around. And you're like, it, in many ways, it reminds me of what M. Night Shyamalan would do in his past works where he leads these little clues throughout, and you're so immersed in what's going on in the picture that you're not trying to add things up. You're immersed in the moment. Watching it a second time, I had a greater appreciation for it. And he did get nominated. Well, the film did, and Jordan Peele got nominated for director, which I
thought... I'm going to look here, too, on my phone, but I think also, too, the actor, which I can't pronounce his name... Yeah, Daniel Kaluuya, the lead actor, got nominated for Best Actor.
Wow.
So, yeah, in there. Yeah, so... I mean, overall, it's a great film. It's fantastic, so... I'm going to throw one out there, too, that's getting a lot of Oscar buzz that I saw, The Shape of Water.
I liked it. I enjoyed it.
You know, there was a couple of things that I thought was a little bit unusual with it. I
mean, the whole premise of the film was unusual.
I felt that at times that we were having sex scenes in this movie just to have sex scenes, and that kind of a little bit bothered me because it took me out of the rhythm of the film a little bit.
To me, it's an R-rated E.T. meets Beauty and the Beast. You could even just say, I mean, I could probably simplify it more by just saying it's kind of an R-rated Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, it is.
That's what it is.
It is, yeah. But I thought that Sally Hawkins did a fantastic job in her role as...
Yeah, she was good.
She was, and deserves to be nominated. Richard Jenkins did a really good job in his supporting role, too.
Yeah, I liked him a lot. I think he's... To me, he's the... Not that the other performances weren't good, but I think his maybe stands out a little bit more for me.
Yes. Really, really dug that. Really liked it. I think... here we go. This is a movie that I had high hopes for, but it just fell flat. Battle of the Sexes.
Yeah, I didn't care for it either, and I don't...
I know why. I think maybe for you, I don't know about you, but I'll throw it out there.
Sure.
I think the source material is just thin. Like, the way that I looked at it was, I'm sitting there watching it going, okay, I'm supposed to hate Bobby Riggs, but really, I mean...
In the film, you're not.
Yeah, you're like, well, yeah, in the film, he's like, okay, so this is all an act. This is his shtick that he does, but really he's not. You know what I mean? Like, there was no one to really hate. And so for me... Just like, I'm like, the source material, I think, was thin. Because from what I understand, speaking to people who are older than me, that's kind of how Bobby Riggs was. Even when the event actually took place, he was kind of this brash, you know, but really behind scenes, he was, it's a paycheck, you know.
Yeah, it was more of a, he was doing P.T. Barnum.
Yeah.
You know.
Or Vince McMahon, if we're going to be, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just was kind of... really, like, bored with the film. Until they got to actually playing the match, which was very exciting.
Yeah, I guess, to a certain extent, I didn't buy Emma Stone as Billie Jean King. It really felt like she was doing an impersonation. To me, it didn't feel like much more than surface material.
Yeah. No, I agree. I was disappointed quite a bit with this one. I wanted it to be good, and I thought it was going to be really, really good, and it just kind of fell flat, unfortunately. So... What else is on your list? I know you have a couple more there.
I think we talked about Wind River the last time around, but that would be my number four.
No, we did not talk about Wind River. Okay.
With Jeremy Renner Native American. He's investigating, assisting in kind of a murder investigation with the FBI. He's the wildlife tracker, and he gets pulled in because of his knowledge there when the FBI comes in to investigate a murder. Really good. You know, gets into the background of kind of the plight of
Native Americans.
I think it's the Navajo that were on the land. Mm-hmm. And
it's not a period piece, correct? It does take place in modern times, correct?
Okay. Yes, but then it deals with loss and grief, and there are multiple characters that are going through the same thing. And a lot of poignant scenes that I think really, you know, are really moving. And then we get more into another big Oscar one, and this is probably the fave for Best Picture, I would say, this or The Shape of Water. I like Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. That's my number three pick, and I hope if there were one to win, that would be the one that I'm pulling for.
Okay. All right.
At least that's my highest ranked Best Picture on my top 10 list.
Okay. What's number two?
Two is The Meyerowitz Stories, New and Selected. It's Noah Bamba.
Oh, okay.
With Ben Stiller and Dustin Hoffman and Adam Sandler. Mm-hmm. And I would say probably his, to me, it's his best performance that I've seen him give.
Okay. All right. I don't have anything else new. I do have one fantastic movie that came out in 2016 that I just recently watched. The Founder with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, yeah, I really like that.
Nick Offerman. excuse me. I really, really dug it. I did not get to see it when it first came out. It just popped up on Netflix. I was like, I have to watch this. And I really liked it. I really dug it.
Yeah, that was one that I think they released at the end of 2016 and actually popped up in Columbus in 2017. It didn't quite...
You know what? I was going to ask, because I swore it came in 2017 here in Columbus.
It did, yeah.
It did? Okay, thank you. Because I was
it
like...
It was one of those they released in LA and New York to be awards eligible.
Okay.
And I think they had higher hopes for it, at least. I think it did fairly well critically, but it never really got a push into awards season, which I think they had hoped for. And Keaton's really good.
He is.
I mean, it's a terrific and amazing story as to how McDonald's came to be what McDonald's is.
Yes, yes.
And kind of the dirty dealings that had to go
right?
down
exactly.
You know, for McDonald's to be what it is.
Exactly, exactly. It was. There was a lot of underhanded stuff going on there. So, what's your number one movie of the year?
And my number one movie of the year, and I think this is the third time it's happened, it's a Pixar film, Coco.
Oh, Coco. Okay, about the Day of the Dead?
Yes, yeah. And, I mean, you talk about moving. The ending probably hits home for me, which is why I think it really works. It's one of the more emotional conclusions to a Pixar film, probably as big as maybe a lot of people were moved by Inside Out quite a bit. But it's a terrific fun. It moves fast. I think it's probably the best looking picture of the year.
Okay.
I mean, this film is vibrant with colors and, you know, different looking characters and unique situations. And, you know, it's set in Mexico. We don't get a lot of animated films that are set in Mexico. And then, of course, we get even less set in the afterlife. So, it's
are there any luchadors in there? Masked wrestlers? There's got to be some masked wrestlers in Coco. No. I'll be disappointed if there's not at least one. There's got to be one in the background.
I'm sure there's I'm sure there is one in the background.
John, everyone's in mass. It's Day of the Dead. all right. So you want to talk about some of the films that are coming out here in the first half of 2018?
Sure.
I think, you know, some of the big ones are dropping here in very, very soon. I believe in February, Black Panther and the 1517 to Paris. So, what's your thoughts? I know you're suffering from a little bit of superhero fatigue. You've admitted to that.
Yes.
Well, so, you're not excited for Black Panther?
I
will be honest. I don't know.
It looks like there's a little too much, just based on the trailer, a little too much origin story. I guess I don't mind the origin story, but it looks... I like... A lot of times, I like the origin stories that are based... Wonder Woman is the exception.
Okay.
But I like origin stories that are based here in the United States.
Okay.
It seems a little more down to earth. If you're going to go far out with...
See...
I don't know. I guess it doesn't matter. I enjoyed Superman and his origin... Well, his origin...
Here, I'll help you with this. Being a comic book geek, I never liked Black Panther. I just thought he was a boring-ass character. He never, ever, to me, was interesting.
Okay.
Never interesting to me. So when they announced they're doing a Black Panther movie, I'm like, woohoo! Don't care! I will say slowly but surely, my interest has been built based on those trailers that they have released. They have done a fabulous job, I think, of putting in some big action, putting in some superb hip-hop music underneath from Run the Jewels, who is up in, you know, who right now is probably the biggest hip-hop group out there right now. They've done a very good job with that. Martin Freeman's in it, so that's a plus for me. I really like Martin Freeman. My interest is now, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's like a 6. Where originally it was a 1. Because with you, I'm like, I don't care. He's the dude that runs the tribe in Africa. Boring. Don't care. You know? So, it's slowly building for me. So, I'll be curious to check it out.
I did like him. He was in, I think, Civil War, wasn't he?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
So, I enjoyed his character in Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So, hopefully that'll lead to something good in this. And you're right, the action scenes, what little we get to glimpse in the trailer, look pretty well done.
Yes. So. 1517 to Paris, that's Eastwood's new film there. I guess it's getting a little bit of buzz.
Right, that's the one with the members of the military there.
Correct.
They're on board, yeah.
Yeah, which I think that's going to be getting quite a bit of buzz there. Well, we talked about Black Panther, obviously Avengers Infinity War. That's a big one that's coming up here in the first half of 2018.
And that should really pick up essentially where Civil War left off, right?
Essentially, yes. Yes, okay. It will. And
which I did enjoy. I thought that was one of the better of the Marvel pictures.
I'm a little bit concerned that there's so many darn characters in this movie that, you know, I know it's going to be kind of a two-parter, but I'm really, really concerned that there's so many characters that we might get bogged down in side stories. I'm hoping that they can keep it on track. I mean, because if you count, I forget, legit, there's like 30-some-odd characters in the movie.
Oh, wow.
Because you think it's all of the Avengers. It's the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, right.
It's, you know, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Thor, Hulk, Black Widow. Like, there's
you have to figure some of these are going to take, some of the characters naturally, it's not going to be a 3-hour film, I assume.
No.
So some of the characters are going to have to take a back seat.
I think so.
They'll fall into the backdrop.
Sure.
It'll be interesting to see which ones are the lead.
True.
Guardians of the Galaxy has become so popular.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways, I'm trying to think how big those films were compared to, you know, the last Avengers pictures.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I'd have to look up to see what the box office was on those.
I mean, but so it'll be interesting to see how much play Pratt's going to get, you know, compared to Robert Downey Jr.
Or Hemsworth or Ruffalo or Downey.
Yeah.
Well, we also have Pacific Rim Uprising, which I have no interest in seeing.
Yeah, do I?
Yeah, because I
didn't care for the first
one. I hated the first one. Deadpool 2, which I'm excited for. I liked Deadpool. I'm excited to see the second installment of it.
I thought the first one was pretty good. Again, I think I just enjoyed it from it's different than your Marvel pictures.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, the marketing campaign for this Deadpool 2 is dead on.
Yes.
I mean, I would give those the Bob Ross Bob Ross bits. And that's 4 out of 4 stars for me right there. So,
anything you have on your list there of upcoming?
I'm not sure.
Oh, Drats! You know what? This is what happens when you podcast live. We totally overlooked a movie. The biggest movie of 2017.
normally you save it to the end. I mean, I forgot about it, you're right.
How can we forget about Star Wars The Last Jedi?
I enjoyed it.
Crying out loud. I did too. I think there's a few problems with it.
Yeah, I would agree.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
A lot, you know.
And I know for the Star Wars faithful, this might come off wrong, but I enjoy The Force Awakens a little bit better than The Last Jedi. The strong points of The Last Jedi, I think, are about as strong as you can get as any of the Star Wars pictures. I think the stuff with Luke and Kylo Ren and Rey, I think that's by far the strong point of the picture.
Yes, I agree.
The stuff that happens back aboard the ship and them just kind of spinning their wheels, I never really bought. I mean, it's kind of set up, it's not necessarily the K-Mutiny, but it's set up as a mutiny aboard the ship. I never bought it. I never felt like there was genuine dissension aboard the ship.
I can see where you're going. I kind of felt like
they were going through the motions.
I can see that. I felt like the quick trip to the casino planet could have been cut down to like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and just been a little bit quicker. I know people
felt like a Jabba detour.
Yeah, we're right. And a lot of people were like, it didn't need to be in there. I think it broke up the monotony of what was going on with the ship. And I liked it, but it should have been shorter. I liked it from a unique
perspective.
Yeah, it should have been shorter. I thought that I did thoroughly, and I agree with you, Rey, Kylo Ren, especially Luke. Like, Luke's storyline I thought was fantastic.
To be honest, it's the best we've had of Luke in the Star Wars franchise.
It has been. Which that leads us into, actually, we have the Han Solo picture that's coming out in the first half of 2018, which should be interesting to see how, if it's as good or as well received as the other Rogue One spinoff movie was received. I know you didn't much care for it, but it still was well received and whatnot, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
I'm looking forward because I think it'll be more of what Star Wars meant to me growing up.
Yeah, okay.
It's got Ron Howard, so I assume,
Anything else, too, that's coming up? What do you have on your list that's coming up
there? I like the dinosaurs, so I'm looking forward to Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Okay.
Looking to see how, you know, Hal Mayhem's gonna break loose again this time.
Again.
I liked Jurassic World a lot, and okay. I like the original Jurassic Park a lot.
Okay.
I would even give a pass to The Lost World, the third one. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And Ready Player One, I'm really looking forward to.
Really? Okay. Yeah,
it's Spielberg, and it's dealing with the future.
It's based in Columbus.
It's based in Columbus, which it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Because it's in the future, and it's
Dystopian future.
More or less.
I just want to know,
are they going to post-apocalyptic, but it might as well be.
Are they going to fit any OSU football references? That's all I need. That's all I want to know.
Maybe the top of the Leveque Tower will be tipped over somewhere. But no, I mean, it's got all those, you know, kind of cagey Easter eggs that they throw into the trailer, which
That's
Spielberg. I mean, sign me up for Spielberg.
What about A Wrinkle in Time? Any interest in that?
You know, I vaguely remember reading it.
I never read the book, so I don't.
I mean, it was a long time ago.
Yeah,
I think it was fifth grade is when we read it. But it's a big Disney. I mean, they've been doing fairly well with their live action remakes. They got the Little Mermaid coming out too. Sure. So,
Tomb Raider. Speaking of reboots,
yeah, I didn't care for either of the originals. I guess I'm a little more intrigued by the new one than I.
Sure. I'm curious to see how Vikander does as her.
Yeah.
You know, I'm that's got me curious. I probably will wait till video to see it. I'm trying to think. I don't think I actually ever saw the second Tomb Raider. I think I've only seen the first one.
I couldn't tell you what happened. It was more of the same. I think that might have been the one where she slugs a shark, which was kind of the highlight of the film for me.
Oh, okay. I don't remember seeing that, so I must not have seen it. Other things out there?
Couple sequels. Actually, there's three sequels.
Okay.
Actually, they're all sequels. Outside of First Man. First Man comes out. It's about...
It's
from the director of La La Land. It's got Gosling, and it's about Neil Armstrong.
First Man. Oh. You know what? I thought that was the animated one from the people that do Wallace and Gromit.
Oh, no.
What is that called? It's not First Man. It's something else.
Yes. No. I could see where you would mistake that
title.
That's what I thought.
I was like, yes, I want to see. Oh, wait, what?
No, I'm sure that'll be good, too, because that's Aardman Animation. And next to Pixar, Aardman, when it comes to stop motion animation, that's the gold standard. So,
what is that movie called? I can't remember now. First Man.
First Man, which is the follow-up for Damien Chazelle, since La La Land, it's got Gosling, and it's about Neil Armstrong. So, that'll probably be later in the year. I'm sure that'll be awards bait. The Disney. I mean, I guess I'm buying into Disney because Incredibles 2.
Yep.
Ralph Breaks the Internet. That's Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Okay.
And then I didn't even realize until I did a little research earlier today that Disenchanted is coming out with Amy Adams again reprising her role as Creed 2. I don't know if you saw Creed.
I did not see Creed. I've heard very good things about it. Michael B. Jordan.
I mean, originally when I saw the trailer for it, I'm like, oh, here we go again, we're resetting the Rocky franchise. You know what, it was a perfect reset, and I'm interested to see where Creed 2 is going to go.
Okay. The only other two that I have on my list that I think that are going to be big movies, Ocean's 8.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
That'll be very interesting. All female cast, taking a look at it from that aspect. And then the one that I have great hesitation for, Rampage. Only because, God, I love that video game. That video game was awesome. But it just, I was like, I don't know how to feel about this. I like The Rock. I like the video game. But it's from the people that brought us San Andreas. And that movie was just a steaming pile of crap.
I gave it a B- on our show. I gave it a B-.
You gotta admit, it's not a very good movie.
I enjoyed it. I think it was... it doesn't take itself too serious.
Okay. All right.
And Rampage isn't going to take it. I mean, for Pete's sake, you're basing a movie on a video game where large creatures smash skyscrapers.
Which, by the way, I believe you could still play Rampage at 16-bit. So... if anybody's listening and they're in Columbus, go down to 16-bit. Tell them I sent you. I don't know. Maybe.
I need to head down there. I've never been.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, Last time I was there, they had Rampage. Yeah.
Yeah, one of these days I'll make my way down there. But I don't know. I think it's going to be silly fun. It's got to be. It's got The Rock.
We'll see. I mean, it's going to be better than Pacific Rim Uprising. That's all I'm going to say. Anyways.
Not setting the bar high, though.
No, it's not. all right, let's make some predictions for Oscars. Here we go. I'll pull them up on my phone as to what we have. You already said for Best Picture, you think it's Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
It's a little early since the nominations came out, but I think it's the frontrunner.
It's because I haven't yet to see Three Billboards. I'm going to go with The Shape of Water.
I think that would be the next likely pick.
Okay. For lead actor, we have Timothy Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name, Daniel Day-Lewis for Phantom Thread, David, and again, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I think it is Kolua for Get Out, Gary Oldman, Darkest Hour, and Denzel Washington for Roman J. Israel, Esquire.
Right. This will probably come down to Oldman versus Daniel Day-Lewis. Whenever Daniel Day-Lewis is up, I haven't seen Phantom Thread yet.
Okay.
I know Oldman has not. I don't believe he's won an Oscar yet.
Yes.
And I think, you know, this is the type of weighty role, Winston Churchill, that you know, he could pull it out.
And I agree with you. I think Gary Oldman wins that as well. Lead actress Sally Hawkins for The Shape of Water, Frances McDormand for Three Billboards, Margot Robbie for I, Tonya. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Cerise Ronan for Lady Bird. I don't know how to pronounce her first name. I don't think that I pronounced it correct. And Meryl Streep for The Post.
Right. Meryl Streep's up because she's actually probably deserving this year. But a lot of times it's, is Meryl Streep in a film? She's nominated. but I think this comes down to, I think it's probably Frances McDormand would be my guess. She carries the picture.
Okay.
Although Sally Hawkins, you know, is...
Yes, I mean, I was very impressed with her performance, but
you couldn't get any more difference between the two performances, to be honest.
Yeah.
One is loud and commanding, mm-hmm. and you know, it's all about. I mean, much of it is her loud voice,
yeah,
and her strong presence.
So I agree with you. I think Frances McDormand wins. I'm going to go with that pick. That too, you know,
and I hope she wins.
Yeah,
I
mean,
I think hers is the best of the performances.
Best Supporting Actor, Willem Dafoe for The Florida Project, which I want to see that movie, and I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, that's one that I didn't get to either. But
Woody Harrelson for Three Billboards, Richard Jenkins, Shape of Water, Christopher Plummer for All the Money in the World, and Sam Rockwell for Three Billboards.
Yeah, and I would say this comes down to Rockwell and probably Dafoe. I think if I'm betting... I'm guessing Dafoe, even though I haven't seen the performance, just because of what I've heard and kind of the nature of it.
I'm going with Richard Jenkins because I really was impressed with his performance in Shape of Water. So I would say I would go with that. And now we got supporting actress Mary J. Blige for Mudbound, Allison Janney for I, Tonya, who I'm just going to say right now, that's it. Allison Janney, I think, was phenomenal in I, Tonya. So that's my pick. Leslie Manville for Phantom Thread, Laurie Metcalf, Lady Bird, and Octavia Spencer, The Shape of Water.
I think it'll come down to Metcalf and Janney.
Okay.
There seems to be two different camps there. You know, they're both playing mothers.
Yes.
And it's integral to what they're, mm-hmm. not that people don't play mothers in other films, but I mean, that is the nature of, they're playing second fiddle to as mothers to their daughters who mm-hmm. are the lead performers.
Mm-hmm.
Janney's is, I don't want to say a caricature because from what I've seen,
it's pretty much spot on.
Yeah, it's pretty spot on.
Yeah.
As opposed to Metcalf, which is a little, not that she's not colorful, but it's a little more restrained than Janney's.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that one plays. Yeah. I think that may be the most interesting horse race.
Are you going to go with Metcalf then?
I don't know I don't know that I want to call it this this point in time. I guess I might give the edge to Janney just because it's such a unique character.
It is.
And it's a very funny performance, although
it is.
At times it's painful to see
if
she actually put Harding through that.
Yeah. All right, lastly, the last big one that we'll talk about, director Dunkirk with Christopher Nolan, Get Out for Jordan Peele. Lady Bird, Greta Gerwig, Phantom Thread, P.T. Anderson, and The Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro. I'm going to give the nod. I'm going to go with Jordan Peele. I don't think he wins, but that would be my pick if I could pick. I don't think he wins. I think there's some heavy hitters in that category, and with all due respect to him, I don't think he wins it. But
I think this is probably an honor just to be nominated, although I'd put him right up there. I think, and I don't think you mentioned it, and I think this might sway my pick for Best Picture.
Okay.
Martin McDonagh, the director of Three Billboards.
Yeah, well, but he's not, he wasn't on the list.
No.
Okay.
That may say something.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So you have Guillermo del Toro, who is doing, it's very much a Guillermo del Toro film, but it's also light for what he's typically dealing with. So this might be one of those, you know, hey, we've always wanted to recognize such a creative force behind his pictures, and here he's done something that's more Academy friendly.
Okay.
You know.
So you think Shape of Water wins?
Maybe this is the time. Yeah,
you think del Toro?
Yeah, I mean, it's rare that a film wins Best Picture when the director's not even nominated.
Oh, okay.
I'll say that.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know how many times it's won, but I'm saying it's very few.
All right.
Like I would bet less than 10% of the time. Not that it can't be done.
No. Well, and we'll have to see, because March 4th is when the Oscars are awarded, so we'll see if we're right or wrong.
Yeah. ways of life. I'm not sure we'll have time to recap in the next show.
So, all right, we're getting way up there time wise. So, Paul, is there anything you want to real quickly plug or mention? Unfortunately, Now Playing is no longer on the air.
Right,
that is, now that is some is sad no news, the folks. Air.
My co-host Mark Pyrefer and I are moving to a podcast.
Okay.
To be determined at a site near you. I'll bring that out on the next.
Okay, there you go. Next time you're on.
Next
all
podcast.
Right.
I'll plug my podcast.
There you go. You're more than welcome to. Welcome to the podcast community.
Yes,
there you go.
Thank you very much.
Even though you haven't done an episode yet.
No, hopefully I've you know, you've shown me.
I've shown you the ropes.
Yeah, show me ropes and I'll do a decent job.
All right, well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode. Thanks again, Paul, for coming on.
Thanks a lot for inviting me. Always have a great time.
All right, now to that break, and then I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen, Paul Markoff and yours truly, talking about movies, talking about the Oscars. I guess we're going to have to wait till March 4th to find out if we were right or not on some of those predictions. But nonetheless, if you would like to drop me a line and let me know what you think about the movies that we talked about or about the Oscars themselves, you can do so a couple different ways. First of all, you can shoot me an email. The address is johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can find me on Twitter @pvdmvp. And you can drop me a line if you like over on the Facebook page of the PVDcast. And that is, of course, facebook.com/pvdcast. There are very many different ways you could get this podcast, as if I need to tell you this. But, of course, the first place where you can get this podcast is pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But it's also available through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, SoundCloud, Pod Paradise, and of course, the Echo Network. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I will chat in each and every one of you later. And until then, stay righteous and stay independent.